call the meeting to order. We've got, first item up this evening, or this afternoon, is the approval of the minutes. Representative Knuth moves the minutes of the February 23rd meeting. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, seeing none, that motion carries. We've got an informational hearing this afternoon on a variety of gambling bills. First up is Representative Brown with House File 2034. And I believe, Representative Brown, you brought the machine with you. I did point out, you knew this ahead of time, I believe, that anybody who brings a prop or machine to the committee, it has to remain with the committee. So that will become the permanent property of the House Commerce and Labor Committee. Welcome to the Commerce and Labor Committee. I do want to say thank you to Representative Christine Murphy, Committee Administrator for the Commerce and or Labor and Consumer Protection Division, who made us cookies this afternoon.
Right.
Representative Davids noted that it was Dietitian's Day, and he's going to between the cookies and the Mountain Dew. He's pretty well set. But
Mr. Chairman's diet, so I can have free cookies. Oh
yeah. So we'll pass these cookies around for Ms. Murphy, and our appreciation to her for sharing those with us. This afternoon's hearing is an informational only hearing. I've been approached a couple times by folks that were wondering what was the outcome going to be, and I told them very earnestly that the reason we're having a hearing is to actually learn more about these bills. And I think everyone is very earnest and genuine in their desire to learn more about the gambling bills that have been brought forth. We did also, Representative Junkie introduced a bill on Tuesday. He was invited to present his bill here, but it apparently is still in the revisor's office being worked on. So it that one may surface as well. With that, Representative Brown, to House File 2034. Can you walk us through it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, House File 2034 was brought to me by some folks home in Albert Lea, Minnesota. These were members of service organizations and community charities, organizations like the American Legion, the Eagles, the Moose, and other clubs that have typically had pull tabs as a part of their revenues. And what their concern was their revenues were dropping, and they were unable to support our community at the level that they had been used to doing. And as all of us know, those of us from smaller towns, we really appreciate the support of our charity organizations for some of the good work that they do. So I decided that what I would do is try to form a bill that would be as unobtrusive as possible, staying as close to current law as possible, but that would still offer them an opportunity to do the work that they've been doing. And so in shaping the bill, I talked with Tom Barrett from the Minnesota Gambling Control Board, and I also talked with Patrick McCormick from House Research and told them what I wanted to do. And they were very kind to work with me to try to formulate this bill that I wanted to do. So when we created the bill, I said, you know, why don't we do something with pull tabs? It's a form of gambling that's already legal. It's already regulated. People understand it here in Minnesota. And so we formulated a bill that would allow, and simply allow, electronic pull tabs. And so, you know, I think probably most of us have seen at some time the paper pull tabs that are littering the floors of different establishments, and people understand them and enjoy them. And like paper pull tabs, this electronic pull tab game described in House File 2034, it follows the current guidelines of pull tabs. It has a finite number of plays for a deal or a game in the same way that paper pull tabs do, and it has a predetermined number of winners. But in addition to electronic pull tabs, I'm sorry, but in addition to paper pull tabs, this machine can be remotely monitored by the board, and it can be deactivated by the board. And I really wanted the board to have a say in how this was regulated. And why would we go paper pull tabs? I'm sorry, why would we go electronic pull tabs? What we're doing is we're very simply providing an electronic version of a paper pull tab game. It's allowing charitable gaming to catch up with technology. It's a more cost-effective method for charitable organizations, and therefore it's going to allow them to increase their revenue. The estimates that I have got say that they could be increase their revenue by $650 million. What this means to the state could be an additional $17.7 million. In a time when we're trying to balance this budget, I think every penny counts. And $17.7 million, we can look at different bills and programs that we appreciate and can put that number to that and say, well, maybe this is something that we can save. You know, in 2009, the Minnesota Gambling Control Board released a study, issues facing the charitable gambling industry, and it had a recommendation to the legislature that we should consider electronic game formats as a way to minimize expenses and to increase profits for charitable causes. This does this. House File 2034 certainly does that. And again, I worked in connection with Tom Barrett and with Mr. McCormick to come up with something that would be acceptable. Again, I want to state that, you know, the projected increase in the charitable gambling receipts is $650 million gross. That certainly will help our small towns and our charitable organizations to, again, provide the services that they would like to provide. And again, the projected increase to the state, and I think that these numbers, when you look at some of the other numbers that are in your pamphlets, I think $17.7 million could be a little low. I am just saying that, you know, we try to be conservative in our estimates. We don't want to over-project, but that could be debated to be a little bit low. And what I have right here for you is a wonderful example of an electronic pull-tab device, so you can see it firsthand. And I just needed you to know that, yes, there is an electronic pull-tab device that exists, and yes, it truly is an electronic version of pull-tabs. And I might want to add, I don't see any arm on the thing, but if I could show the demonstration just briefly before we take questions, I'd really appreciate it.
I see no problem with that. We do have Mr. Barrett from the Gambling Control Board. Sir, if you would raise your hand for us. When I said we were going to take ownership of the machine, that's before I realized that Mr. Barrett is here in the audience. So she owns the machine, or she's operating it, just so we're clear. All right.
Thank
Representative
you,
Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could have Mr. Dan Campo demonstrate the machine.
That's really smart on your part.
Mr. Chairman, Representative before David. He starts, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Representative Brown. How does she get that across the border? Isn't that illegal?
We're not going to talk about that, Representative David.
Okay.
By the way, now that we've got all the members of the committee, and just before Mr. Campo's testimony, a little bit of the lay of the land for the our expectations today. It's an informational hearing. We've given each of the authors 20 minutes to use as they choose. Representative Kahn has two bills up, so she's going to split her time between those two bills. And then we've got some folks that desire to testify in general opposition to some of the gambling bills. They've been listed on the agenda. It's my understanding that we heard from, I believe, Representative Hackbarth, who had been contacted by some additional folks. So we're going to try to hear from those folks as well. But that's the order that we're going to try to keep on, and we're also going to try to get folks out of here by the normal time, because you got to get home and watch the U.S. beat Canada for the gold medal tonight. With what are you, Canadian over there? Mr. Campo, feel free to, you know, go forward with
Mr.
your
Chair
testimony.
Members. Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, my name is Dan Campo. I represent the Minnesota Tavern League. Let me just explain the machine. It's actually kind of fun because I get to spend my afternoon playing with pull tabs. So I'm not going to be able to be near the mic so I can demonstrate it, but I'll just try and hopefully my voice will carry.
Basically, let me get this thing started here really quickly. What I'm going to do, and I'll try this so everybody can see, just like pull tabs, put a buck in right here. The machine reads the dollar. Maybe just for ease to show you what I'm going to talk about here, and what makes this machine different in many ways, this kiosk is actually a pull tab kiosk. It actually reads pull tabs. Now, the traditional pull tab, which Representative Brown has that we're using in our state are basically this type of pull tab, mm-hmm. where we basically peel these back. This machine is doing it electronically. What is happening is these are the actual pull tabs. It's a roll. Understand that there are a finite amount of pull tabs. Just like a pull tab box in any of the bars in members' districts, the pull tabs instead are actually on a roll. The machine reads the pull tab and displays the answer here. So as simple as hit play. It's reading it, and it's displaying what your answer is. And then at the end of that, it actually gets your pull tab. So basically, hit play, it reads the pull tab. I got something.
We won, Mr. Chair.
That's about it's a fairly simple kiosk. It's a simple device, but one of the things that people talk about is the argument is that it's a slot machine. This is not a slot machine. This is a pull tab kiosk. It has a finite amount of tickets, just like any of the boxes within your district for pull tabs. It is not leaving it to chance. This machine is only reading what is on the pull tab. So each time we do this, it's actually reading one of these barcodes, which symbolizes this. It's pretty straightforward. At that point, I think that's about it.
So do you win every time then? Was that apparently on this machine, you win every time.
Is that, we're going to go to one of your district bars.
And every player is supplied with a key so they can open it if need be. And but we should, we make light of it, but that purely is for illustrative purposes. And Mr. Barrett, I don't want him to get anybody in any trouble here, but the point of the machine was just to demonstrate how it works, and there are no winnings or actual playing taking place. Correct, Mr. Campbell?
Yeah, I'll get my buck back out of
it right
now.
Just so we're all, I don't want to get in any trouble either. But anyway, proceed with your testimony, please.
I'm
or
Mr.
Are you
Chair.
Just the demonstrator?
I'm basically just the demonstrator.
All right, Representative Brown.
Any questions for me on that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, and certainly Mr. Campo can answer questions as if there should be any as well. But I also want to point out something kind of special about this. This is really a machine that we wanted to be able to open up and show you that it was identical to pull tab games that currently exist. What I can say to you that there are other versions available as well. It could be very easily completely electronic. Still having a finite number of games that could, or I'm sorry, plays that could be played per game, but there's no need to have paper in a machine at all. It could be totally green, a green machine for green, bringing in green to the state, I would say.
All right, thank you, Representative Brown. Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Representative Brown, did you have anyone else that you had desired to testify with respect to your portion of the?
I do not have anybody else to testify. When you're ready, I can do closing remarks.
Okay. Well, and I think what we'll do is what we will likely do, or what I anticipate doing, is having each author present their bill. We will then take testimony from those that have general opposition or specific opposition. And then what I'd like to do is have everybody available for questions, if you're able to stick around for the period of time. Is that all right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure willing to do that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Representative Brown. Thank you, Mr. Campbell. And you may want to close that machine up. I see Representative Slocum is already looking to grab stuff out of there. So, but with that, next up is Representative Kahn's two bills. Representative Kahn has House Files 2984 and 2354. And Representative Kahn, welcome back. I believe the pages have the materials that you asked to have distributed. And those will be distributed as you present your bills. Which one would you prefer to go forward? You want to do your sports wagering first, or the?
Let's see. Casino at the airport's a little easier.
Okay, go right ahead. That'll be House File 2354.
Okay, this bill—it's actually not. We call it the bill has been called the casino at the airport. What we really are talking about, though, is just slot machines, and not just in terms of the financial aspects of doing of this. The slot machines would be the most viable financial issue thing to do at the airport. Of course, we do have both of these, you notice, are run by the lottery, and that's because of the constitutional amendments dealing with gambling, which essentially say that the only kind of gambling other than pull tabs, charitable gambling, can be done, needs to be done, needs to be done by the lottery. We can't set up a private institution. There is the most recent, as I was going through my files, I actually found memos which were sent to me by George Anderson. So this is an issue that we've worked on for quite some time. The fiscal note narrative, the most current fiscal note narrative that you have is the, it says fiscal note narrative House File 342, March 2009, which has just been prepared by the lottery staff and board chairman who is here, Clint Harris and Don Feeney are both here to answer questions if we need it. Look, they do point out that there are, I'm glad we're not passing on the bill today because they point out there are technical things wrong with it that would have to be fixed on the fly, and so we'd rather work on that. But if you look at the last page, the net impact for the general fund would be $7.1 million a year, and then since it's through the lottery, the Environmental and Natural Resources Trust Fund would get $4.8 million a year. Let me talk about some of the things that I'm passing out. I actually thought the first I thought about doing this when I was actually passing through Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam, and noticed the casino there, and there are some pictures that you have showing you on this handout talking about. This is actually very small because, of course, there are other casinos all over Holland. But if you notice, people reading today's paper will see a letter to the editor in favor of this, and one of the things that's very, very attractive to me is that 85% of the people who pass through the airport are not Minnesota residents. So it's a very nice way to collect funds from people who are not residents. And I know I've had arguments with some of my friends about what about competition with the existing sources of gambling in the state, and this is the one element that we're looking at that has no, besides the next one that I'll talk about, but this one has no competition with any existing gambling establishments because it's limited to people who have at the airport with a boarding pass. So there's no one, so it's, you know, as air travel gets more and more difficult and people are held up longer and longer at airports, this might be a more and more profitable venture from the state. But nobody is going to buy a ticket to go and gamble at a place that would probably be an inferior experience to gambling casinos that are very short distance away. So that's the, I've always said that this would probably, if this were going to raise billions instead of millions, it would probably zip right out of here. Unfortunately, we can't guarantee more than a fairly small amount of money. But every argument against gambling does not apply to this because of its limited nature. Now, let me go to the next one, which is the sports bookmaking.
Then, Representative Kahn, before you do House File, that would be House File 2984. I should point out to members that Representative Kahn was kind enough to provide us with an estimate that she went through on the airport casino possibility. Yeah. Mr. McCormick prepared in your materials an estimated revenue from video lottery terminals. Representative Brown also has some estimates with respect to electronic pull tab games. You'll find those in the folders. And Representative Kahn, then House File 2984.
Okay. Now, this one, the revenue estimates, even my good friends at the lottery were not willing to provide me with a revenue estimate. The revenue estimate on this is very much more in doubt, particularly because although sports bookmaking is illegal, I imagine I'm not going to say that everyone here has engaged in sports bookmaking, but I will with great sports gambling, but I will with great confidence say that everybody in this room knows somebody who has been engaged in sports gambling, football pool or something like that. And so, you know, compared to most illegal activities in the state, I think this is the only one that we could ever say that about. We started working on this in 94. One of the things I'd like to draw your attention to is the Attorney General's report to the legislature on the analysis of doing a lawsuit challenging the constitutional of the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act. That's the first thing we're told, is that the feds do not allow us to do this. So, you know, again, in 20 minutes, I can't take you through this whole issue, but this report that was then repaired when Skip Humphrey was Attorney General, specifically, in the bill, the legislature made a finding that the passage of the Sports Protection Act has infringed on the traditional rights of states to make their own determinations as to the appropriate methods of controlling or combating illegal gambling or raising state revenue. And this raises serious questions as to the possible violations of the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution. There are also exemptions to several states were grandfathered in because they were doing it or are planning to do it. And the legislature also found that the exemptions granted in this act to a handful of states are unreasonable, arbitrary, and discriminatory. So we're then raising the question of whether the act violates the federal constitutional guarantees of substantive due process and equal protection. So this, we don't have to, when you read through, and you have before you the Attorney General's report, and when you read through it, the conclusion is, we wanted him to challenge it. The conclusion was that a lawsuit challenging the constitutional would require commitment of significant legal resources, and it's highly unlikely to succeed in view of U.S. Supreme Court precedent. And it said the state does not have standing to claim that the act violates the Fifth Amendment. So in order for the state to have standing, which is what we now propose to give the state standing, is you'd have to do it. You'd have to start doing it and have someone try to stop it. And they would have to sue to have us try and stop it. And one would answer that instead of pursuing with the suit that the Attorney General said was useless. And I think at this time, there would be states that would be of interest to join with us in doing it. We've heard estimates that there are as high as $2 billion that, again, reading from this old thing, says estimates of the total volume of sports bookmaking are notoriously unreliable. Estimates of illegally booked sports wagering in the United States vary over so wide a range and rest on so little hard data as to be practically meaningless. I do know at several times that I've been dealing with this bill, I did have someone call me and say they were very interested in having the bill pursued, and none of them was very interested in testifying in favor of it. One of the other things that has also changed the whole situation, and I've given you two other things in the bill, and I hope this isn't considered to be inducement or leading people into temptation, but there's a page here which shows you two downloads from the internet, which shows that anybody in possession of a computer, or they don't even have to travel out of state now, can do all the sports gambling that they want to do. Just the last piece also that I pointed out was a news article with the title saying "Airport Reaps Slot Machine Windfall from Waiting Travelers." That's the Las Vegas situation. So I think I've given you as much as you would ever want to read on this. And again, I do have the people from the lottery are here to answer more detailed questions, and I'd be pleased to do that at the end. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. We appreciate the presentations on the two bills. And we've, I think next up then, we've had Representative Brown's bill, which was for video pull tabs or VLTs, Representative Kahn with the proposal at the airport and sports bookmaking. And then finally, we have Representative Hackbarth has joined us for House File 2578 is up next. And that is a version of what has been termed the Racino proposal. I think unique to Representative Hackbarth's Racino proposal is that it would be a constitutional amendment, but I'm sure that that he can walk us through the details of it. Representative Hackbarth, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have an I turned in two handouts to your committee, and I have another handout if the pages could pass it out, please.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for hearing the bill. I know it's just an informational hearing, but hopefully we can hear the bill a little further down the line and take a vote on this. Members, I'll explain the bill to start with. It is a constitutional amendment that would say to the people of Minnesota and ask them on the next at the next general election whether we would allow the two existing horse racing facilities that we have in the state of Minnesota, allow them to have slot machines at their facilities. And we would heavily tax those profits that the racetracks would make off of the profits off of that the slot machines, and then use that money, take that money to the state, and then use that money to build a new Viking stadium. And the remainder of those proceeds would go into the general fund. It's a very, very simple concept. It just asks the people, are you going to allow slot machines at Canterbury and Running Aces? And then we would tax the profits from that, send that money to the state, just to repeat, and then use that money to build a new Viking stadium. This is a new source of income to the state of Minnesota. The state of Minnesota is facing a $1.2 billion deficit right now. In the out years, when the next governor takes over, when the next legislature takes over, we're probably going to be facing a $4 or $5 billion deficit. We need income into the state of Minnesota to help balance this budget, and it also saves the Minnesota Vikings and keeps the Minnesota Vikings here. As you know, the contract runs out at the Metrodome after the 2011 season, and there is no new facility for the Vikings. So I think this has to be addressed this year so we can get this put on the ballot in the 2010 election so that we can come back and work out the details of getting the stadium done and putting this tax in place and letting the horse racing facilities have their slot machines. I think we could let the bonds on this once the voters approve this, and we can get started on the construction of a new stadium right away. With that, I would stand for any questions that you might have. I do have some other handouts if you'd like to look at those. The one handout is about the 12 other racinos that are across the nation in the United States. And the kind of profits that they're bringing into the state, or not profits, but tax revenue that they're bringing into the states. If you just want to take a look, Delaware has three, Florida has three. If you look at Maine, the state of Maine has one racino, privately owned racino, not run through the state lottery or anything like that, employs 324 people, brings into the state of Maine $50.52 million in the year 2008. $50 million. Now, this is one racino in one state, probably the smallest one, and it still brings in that kind of money. Now, if you're talking about Minnesota, a lot larger population and two racinos in the near the metropolitan area, they're predicting that we can bring in to the state of Minnesota about $125 million a year in tax revenue. That's way more than enough to take care of the debt service on the bonds that you would need to build a new Viking stadium. Talking to Lester Bagley and the Vikings, it sounds like if we were to finance the whole package at $1 billion over 30 years, you would need approximately $50 million a year to pay that off over 30 years. And this is $125 million a year. So that more than takes care of the Viking stadium issue. That's why I'm bringing this forth this year, is so that we can deal with the stadium, the Viking stadium issue. And there's We all know there's just not enough money in the state of Minnesota to deal with the Viking Stadium issue. There's a clear-cut way of taking care of that, and a new source of revenue that can get the job done. And I think the people of Minnesota want to save the Vikings. They don't want to see them go to Hollywood and play in a new stadium out there. So I think this is a way to get the job done. I also have another gentleman here that would like to say a few words, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hackworth,
for the record. Thanks. My name is Corey Merrifield. I'm the founder of a grassroots organization called SaveTheBikes.org, and I'm here really to, today to talk about how Mr. Hackworth's plan can affect positively keeping the Minnesota Vikings here in Minnesota. So many of you probably received emails from Vikings fans in your district over the NFL wildcard weekend back in January asking for your help on finding a stadium solution to keep the Vikings here in Minnesota. We have lost teams here in Minnesota before, the Lakers and the North Stars, due to inaction on stadium issues. Over the last few decades, the state of Minnesota has profited well from professional sports. According to the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, the state of Minnesota has made $450 million on a $50 million investment. I also don't need to tell you that Minnesota is in desperate need of job creation right now. Additionally, the labor trades have the highest unemployment at 25%. I do want to preface that my organization, SaveTheBikes.org, does not advocate for any one specific stadium plan, but we do see Racino as one of the best opportunities to keep the team here in Minnesota. So between building a stadium and the Racino solution put forward today by Representative Hackbart, these two opportunities can create up to 20,000 contract and job opportunities for the state of Minnesota and have well over a $1 billion economic output. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, you have an opportunity here today to let the public put these jobs into effect without a general tax increase, and that's where Racino comes into play. So I know there's some arguments out there. I want to talk about that and just clear the air and try to find some common ground. Some legislative leaders have said that Minnesota is not looking to expand gambling, but the truth is gambling is here and it's not going to go away. You can currently walk into 18 casinos in the state of Minnesota and play slot machines. You can walk into any gas station or convenience store and gamble on the lottery. You can walk into racetracks and gamble on horses, play poker, and partake in other forms of gambling that already exist in Minnesota casinos. This bill is simply asking to put slot machines, which are already played in the state of Minnesota, in existing places of business whose main revenue source is legalized gambling. It is not new to the state. It is not a new facility. Therefore, it is not an expansion. If we can't agree on that, I'll put this before the committee to consider. On January 31st of this year, not even 30 days ago, Minnesota introduced a new form of gambling called Mega Millions. I spoke with a key leader over at the Minnesota State Lottery today, and he said the state considers the lottery gambling. He said that 50% of the gross profits from Mega Millions go to facilitating that new piece of lottery. Furthermore, he said that they're going to need to hire 2 to 3 people to help with administrating this new form of gambling. Now, if that's not enough, in terms of expansion, the Minnesota State Lottery will be introducing 45 to 50 new scratch games this year. So if we aren't expanding gambling, why are we introducing new forms of it not even 30 days ago and ongoing in 2010? It's estimated that Racino can generate $125 to $140 million in annual tax revenue. The Vikings are asking for $40 million annually. Actually, the cost of a stadium for Metrodome next would be $860 million. Ziggy Wealth has volunteered to put up $260 million of that, leaving $600 million. That would be $40 million annually over 15 years to help with the stadium. According to the RSM McGladrey financial report, a new stadium would generate $36 to $40 million in direct tax revenue annually. This would be a way to generate a user-based elective tax revenue that helps not only keep a cultural and economic asset like the Vikings, but it can also help with $800 to $100 million annually that can be put towards the state deficit or other programs struggling with funding. In closing, you, the committee, have an opportunity to put to vote a stadium and deficit solution that nearly pays for itself and will generate millions for years to come while putting 20,000 people to work. Now, I know you have the best lobbyists in the world trying to influence you, but I ask the committee this very question that I'll be asking the public starting next week. What is more important to Minnesota? 20,000 jobs? Keeping the Vikings? Paying down the state deficit? Or $13 million in lobbying efforts? I ask that you please help put this bill on the ballot this fall. And I appreciate you, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Merrifield. Representative Hackbarth, it's my understanding you also have Dan O'Gara on behalf of the Licensed Beverage Association testify as well. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Mr. O'Gara, and that's not. All right. That's almost right.
Okay.
Actually, we're going to finish this, and then we've got
okay.
Mr. O'Gara. So do you have any closing comments with respect to the bill?
Well, I do, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. And it's already been mentioned that this is a huge, huge issue for jobs in the state of Minnesota. I mean, this is going to create a lot of thousands of jobs for the state of Minnesota to build this stadium. The Gopher Stadium has been built. The Twin Stadium is done, nearly done. And we need jobs in the state of Minnesota to get this economy going again, and this is going to be one of those things that can get the state moving again. It's going to provide many, many jobs, and even after the stadium is done, it's going to be providing jobs. Also, Mr. Chairman, as far as jobs go, we don't want to see Running Aces closed down. We don't want to see Canterbury Park closed down. This is a huge issue to the farming community and to the horse industry in the state of Minnesota. If we lose horse track racing in the state of Minnesota, it could be very, very detrimental to our economy in the state of Minnesota, more than it already is. I don't want to see Canterbury Park shut down. I don't want to see Running Aces shut down. We need to raise additional money for purses at these facilities so that we can get better quality horses here, people that will want to come here for the better purses. And it would be a huge boom to the state of Minnesota if we could upgrade the racing that takes place out at Canterbury and Running Aces. And if we let these places shut down, that's going to even hurt our economy even further in the state of Minnesota. So it's really all about jobs, Mr. Chairman and members. So I would certainly like to have you give this further consideration another time. I know it's informational, but please, please consider bringing this back at another time this session.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. Appreciate your presentation.
Thank you.
And now I've got Mr. O'Gara and Mr. Bagnoli coming down to testify with respect to the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association's take on these bills. Mr. O'Gara, welcome back.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Dan O'Gara. I own O'Gara's Bar and Grill in St. Paul. We've been there for Monday. We're celebrating our 69th anniversary, so we've been there a few years. And I know I don't look that old, but I've aged well. I'm also president of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association and represent several hundreds of bars around the state. I'm here today to talk about the state of the bars in Minnesota, in particular independent mom-and-pop bars like mine. Bars like mine are typically run by a husband and wife who live and raise their family in the community that they run their businesses in. These are places that are public houses where people go to celebrate birthday parties, anniversaries, going away parties, where firefighters and police officers have graduation and retirement parties, and where political campaigns and have fundraisers and victory parties. It is these types of bars that sponsor little league teams, provide gift certificates and donations for churches and hundreds of other charitable events. These are places that open their doors to hundreds of benefits when there's a tragedy or when there's a need in the community. We are in the business of hospitality. Our families are part of the community, and our businesses provide thousands of jobs. As an industry, we are one of the largest employers in the state. In St. Paul, I'm sure many of you have been to an event at my bar or John and Pat Mancini's place. What we and dozens of other establishments in the city of St. Paul provide to the vitality of the city is being replicated around the state by similar establishments in your cities. These bars and restaurants can contribute to the personality of a community, run by people who care deeply about their community, and without which I believe the respective communities would be worse off. It is no secret that the bars and the charities in Minnesota have been struggling lately. Over the past 5 years, the state has lowered the blood alcohol level to 0.08, the smoking ban has been enacted, and the worst economic downturn in 60 years has occurred. At the same time as the economic downturn, the minimum wage has increased three times without a tip credit, which has put further pressure on many bar owners. I urge you to talk to the people who own establishments in your city, how they're doing. There isn't one of them that I know that's doing well. You know, I have this prepared statement, but I just really want to express my place. You know, we've been there almost 70 years now. My wife and I are going through our checkbook to see where we can cut so we can make payroll. I'm going in the worst time of the year coming up in summer. And this is happening all around the state right now. And if there's any conversation about any expansion of gambling, whether it's a pull tab machine, bingo, electronic bingo, video games a chance, we need to be at the table. We have to be at the table. It's not a question of malcontent bar owners that my dad was accused of being in the 80s when he was up here testifying in the late 80s and early 90s for video lottery. We're struggling right now. We employ 52 people right now, and I don't know how I'm going to keep all these people working without it. We need gambling, number one, to bring people in, number two, to offset some of the costs of the decisions that have been made in this building and the building across the street. I don't know what to say. There's places closing every day. The charities are closing one every 10 days, I've heard. I don't know if that is still going on. But I can't impress upon you people enough how bad it is right now. Joe's going to talk about kind of the state of the charities and where we're at.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Bagnoli. I'm an attorney at McGrand Shea Law Firm, and I represent the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. Just to echo what Mr. O'Gara said, I can't think of one bar, family-owned bar, that does not have charitable gambling in it, or lately I should say had charitable gambling. For most bar owners, it's an extension of their involvement in the community. The Hockey Association, the local police or fire departments all have charities that are supported and run out of family-owned bars in Minnesota. For most bars, charitable gambling is not a large source of revenue. The reason bars want charitable gambling is because customers like it. It helps to provide entertainment for customers who hopefully will then buy a burger and have a beer. It is undeniable that charitable gambling is not just having a slight downturn that is due to the economic conditions. It is a crisis. They are losing one charitable gambling location a week in Minnesota. The facts speak for themselves. Since charitable gambling was instituted in 1985, 2008, the most recent year that numbers are available, 2008 was the worst year in terms of charitable contributions made since 1985, the year that it was established. Moreover, 2008 was the worst year in terms of taxes paid to the state since 1989. Unfortunately, I am told the trend line is not getting better. It is getting worse. One a week is closing. In St. Paul, the community that Dan has his bar in, last year the Hockey Association in Dan's area closed charitable gambling. 4 years ago, that charitable gambling provided $40,000 a year to the Hockey Association to help offset the cost and make it more affordable for families. I'm told that in the east side of St. Paul, where Herb Brooks, the coach of the 1980 Miracle Hockey team, is from, is struggling to provide hockey for the youth in that part of the city because the proceeds from charitable gambling, in part because the proceeds from charitable gambling, are dwindling. The decline in charitable gambling is due to a confluence of many factors that are also battering bars. However, I'm told that by those who represent Allied Charities that one of the other reasons that charitable gambling is dwindling is that younger people, who often frequent bars a little more, are less interested in playing a game that is in paper form. They have grown up with cell phones, handheld video games, and other technology that didn't exist for any of us. Consequently, they are less interested in playing games that seem to be from their grandparents' era than their own. Obviously, you can ask representatives of Allied Charities for more current statistics and theories as to why the revenues are evaporating. But the long and the short of it is there are less people coming to bars, people are staying shorter time periods, and people are not gambling as much. This is bad for family-run bars, bad for charities, and bad for communities. And to the degree that the state is receiving less tax revenue than it has since 1989, it's bad for the state. On behalf of Dan O'Gara and other family-owned bars that currently have charitable gambling within them, we are seeking some updating of the current form of charitable gambling that is done in bars. This updating would be some form of electronic gambling. As everyone in the room knows, there are a variety of ways in which to accomplish this. Representative Brown earlier today proposal to merely change the form of pull tabs from being played on paper to being played electronically seems like an easy step. Another easy step is to authorize electronic bingo. This game also currently is legal in the paper form. The estimated revenue that will be generated by each of these proposals varies and is likely to subject to considerable debate. What is clear, however, is that the numbers the lottery and gambling control have provided in the past, which are all, frankly, we have to go on, have indicated that the dollars are significant, both to the state and to the charities. We think a form of electronic gambling that is run through charitable gambling or the lottery has a number of benefits. First, the systems are already set up and in place. Charities can very easily add additional games, and the systems for monitoring charitable gambling are already in place. Second, and most importantly, if electronic games are allowed on a limited basis where liquor licenses exist, we do not see this as any more of a challenge to existing casinos than current charitable gambling is a threat to existing casinos. The existing casinos are destinations where the purpose of going to the casino is almost exclusively gambling. In contrast, most people do not go to family-run bars like O'Gara's or Dracula's or Newman's or any other bars that you know in your communities. It's not the primary purpose of going is to gamble. Instead, the gambling that occurs is ancillary. It's merely a means of passing times like playing backgammon or checkers or playing pull tabs. Changing the form of gambling from paper-based to electronic-based does not change this real and distinct difference that distinguishes the reason people go to casinos or family-run bars. In closing, Dan and I just want to thank you for the opportunity to talk about this important issue. It's real. It's a problem. The charities, I think, can better express the real issues that are going on there. We believe that by allowing bars to modernize the type of gambling that are played within them, the charities can be saved, the state can realize significant new revenue without raising taxes, and family-run bars can continue to provide a public place for people to congregate and create a better community. Thank you.
Mr. O'Gara, Mr. Bagnoli, thank you for your testimony. The next on our agenda as far as testifiers, we have Ms. Meeks, Annette Meeks, and then Kathy Perot. Welcome back.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Chairman Atkins and members. My name is Annette Meeks, and I'm the CEO of the Freedom Foundation of Minnesota, a nonprofit educational organization headquartered in Minneapolis. I appear before you today to share with you some new information about the problems of state government gambling on a very unstable form of regressive taxation, and that's gambling. Contrary to what you've been told by those who propose racinos or putting slots in neighborhood bars, gambling doesn't create easy money. Frankly, more gambling creates only one sure thing, more problem or compulsive gamblers. Proximity and availability are everything to creating problem gamblers. Experts in addictive behavior estimate that 1 to 3% of gamblers become problem gamblers. And for those who live within 50 miles of a casino, it's on the high end, the 3%. Some treatment specialists say that highly addictive forms of gambling, like slot machines, that number can rise as high as 5%. So addictive is this form of gambling that in Chicago, a group recently of prominent religious leaders launched a campaign to keep video poker out of Illinois. The Reverend Philip Blackwell, senior pastor of downtown Chicago's Methodist Temple, described a Harvard University study showing a 10% increase in crime in neighborhoods where poker machines are brought in like this. He described these machines as the crack cocaine of gambling. And while the Illinois state budget is hemorrhaging as large, even larger than ours, these community leaders are banding together to keep this highly addictive form of gambling out of their neighborhoods. Gambling addicts have higher than average incidences of depression, suicide, domestic violence, and child endangerment. not to mention the crime level and cost to local governments, who must prosecute those who embezzle or commit other crimes to pay for their gambling debts. Most disturbing, though, is a study by our own Mayo Clinic, which recently reported that in 1970, the average age of those treated for gambling addiction was between the ages of 30 and 55. That makes a lot of sense when you think about it, because back in 1970, you had to go to Las Vegas to gamble. Today, however, the Mayo Clinic reports, the most recent year of their numbers, 1990, the average range for those seeking treatment at the Mayo Clinic for gambling addiction is 17 to 70. The proliferation of gambling throughout the countryside has made our youngest and our oldest citizens victim of what amounts to a predatory tax. It's safe to say that everybody in this room knows at least 100 friends or families. So tonight, when you're laying in bed worrying about everything that's on your mind, think of those people and realize that if we do have slots and bars, if we do have a racino, 3 to 5 of those friends or family members will become addicts. Because facts are stubborn things, and more gambling revenue creates only more problems for every state that decides to tax their residents this way. You're considering adding slot machines to Canterbury Park and Running Aces Racetrack and even every neighborhood bar in Minnesota because we're staring at a very large budget deficit. I get all that. And many other states are in the same sea of red ink. Only 7 states currently report no budget deficits, while other states have staggering numbers. California's budget deficit was recently estimated to be close to $42 billion, while New Jersey, sit down for this one, 1/3 of their entire annual operating budget is how large their budget deficit is. So I get why we're digging underneath the couch cushions looking for cash. But much of this revenue shortfall is due to a prolonged and deep recession. For many years, economists have told us that gambling revenue was recession-proof, and that despite good times and bads, Americans would continue to gamble, thus providing a relatively stable source of additional income. That's why a lot of states have bet on it. However, this long recession and the proliferation of various types of gambling across the country have taught us another lesson. Gambling interests suffer as much as any other business during these very tough economic times. Standard & Poor's recently issued a report evaluating gambling in Las Vegas. Interestingly, the report said that going back from 1997, through 2007, never did 2 gaming companies default. In the years, and he said in most years, none did. In the last 2 years, 20 have. Native American tribal casinos are facing much the same difficulties. Nationally, 3 big casinos defaulted, and the massive Foxwoods Resort Casino in Connecticut, the largest in the country, in Connecticut in the country, also faced severe budget problems. The Skokomish tribe closed an entire casino last year rather than hemorrhage much-needed cash. Revenues dipped as much as 30% in some tribal casinos in Washington State. In New Jersey, the Casino Control Commission reported that gambling revenues in Atlantic City dipped 13.2% last year, with some casinos seeing revenue drop by as much as 25%. By the way, that's Donald Trump's casino. It's kind of hard to feel sorry for him. In Iowa, Harrah's Entertainment, the world's biggest casino chain, has offered to buy out the state if they don't have to offer live greyhound gambling, or greyhound racing, pardon me, at their 2 racinos. It's kind of ironic since Iowa lawmakers 16 years ago agreed to save dog racing in that state by letting them install slot machines. Their slot machines haven't worked there either. One editorial writer recently wrote in a state that's hemorrhaging red ink that perhaps a solution to that state's continuing revenue problems and declining gambling revenue would be for the state to buy some Powerball tickets, where the odds are winning the grand prize are 1 in 95 million. And those are about the same odds as Minnesota citizens winning by adding slot machines to our great state. I ask you today, and I'll continue to ask for as long as gambling advocates, to continue to push for what amounts to a very bad bet for our Minnesota's future. Please don't gamble with our future.
Ms. Meeks, thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Kathy Perot and then Mr. Pritchard. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I am Kathy Peralt, and I am the executive director of the North Star Problem Gambling Alliance. The North Star Alliance is a nonprofit agency that works to improve the lives of those people that are affected by problem gambling, whether that's gamblers themselves who are getting treatment, family members, and we work on education, research, and advocacy for treatment. We are a gambling-neutral organization and take no position on whether the state should or should not be involved in gambling. But gambling is here, and there are a percentage of citizens who end up in extreme problems, and this can spill over to their families, to their businesses, and result in criminal justice issues and numerous other problems. My message to you today is that whatever we do with gambling in the state of Minnesota, that a larger percent of those dollars, and we've heard lots of numbers thrown out here in millions and whatnot, that a percentage of those dollars be dedicated to helping people who have developed gambling problems. That means more money for treatment. That means more money for awareness and education, the kinds of professional trainings that North Star does. Again, a lot of numbers have been thrown out here, and even for the next fiscal year, I was recently informed that we needed to absorb a budget cut that amounts to 22% of our grant funding. So, again, we are gambling neutral. Whatever the state decides to do is not our issue, but we do ask that you be firm in dedicating funds to help those people who are in trouble with problem gambling. Thank you,
Ms. Perrault. Ms. Pritchard, welcome back.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, my name is Tom Pritchard, President of the Minnesota Family Council, and we want to speak in opposition to the efforts to expand gambling in general. I think one of the first things is I would say we view these bills as fundamentally tax increase bills, and we believe this is a bad way to raise taxes. It targets the poor, those least able to afford it, and so really a vote for these bills is a vote to raise taxes. Secondly, we think it's fundamentally wrong for the state to target its citizens to engage in activities that victimize a significant number of people in the state, and that's just what gambling does. The state is targeting its own citizens to engage in activity which is not in their best interest, and so we think it's just problematic and not the right thing to do for the state. Also, it's already been mentioned some of the costs, but I just want to reiterate some of those to the state and society from gambling. Are far greater than any perceived economic benefits. You've got addiction, bankruptcy, crime, corruption, domestic abuse, destruction of marriages and families, and suicide. Suicide attempts among pathological gamblers is higher than any other addiction. Divorce rates for problem and pathological gamblers is 2 to 3 times higher than for non-gamblers. Gambling is the fastest growing driver of bankruptcy. Studies show that the costs of gambling outweigh 3 to 1 any economic benefits on a conservative side. Some comments were made about raising economic development, but what's interesting is what gambling does is not create new resources and wealth, but what it does is just pulls existing resources away from communities. One study in Illinois found that 75% of the revenues at a particular casino came from individuals who lived within 35 miles of the casino, and 95% of revenues came from within 75 miles. So you're not pulling in money from out of the state, you're just taking it away from Main Street, and we just don't think gambling is the way to go from a social and even a fiscal standpoint. It just makes the state more dependent on a questionable source of revenue, and also it just is not in the best interest of the citizens of the state, so we would encourage you not to support efforts to expand gambling. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pritchard. Jim Osmus, from the city of Hinckley, and then Victoria Winfrey, president of Prairie Island, is up next. Mr. Osmus, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chairman Atkins and members of the committee, my name is Jim Osmus. I'm the city administrator from Hinckley. In 1992, Grand Casino was opened by the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe, and they presently employ more than 1,700 people. We have experienced considerable growth since the Mille Lacs opened that casino. One of the areas of growth include opening of non-tribal businesses, and these include the several restaurants. There's about to be a McDonald's open this spring. There's a medical clinic, an optometrist, a credit union, an antique mall, a 6-screen cinema, a greenhouse, a garden and feed store, a bed and breakfast, a car wash, a powder coating business, a beauty saloon, and also a Holiday Inn was opened and an 18-hole golf course that were later purchased by the Mille Lacs Band. In addition to the Gateway Medical Clinic, a dental office, and credit union in Hinckley, all have expanded. The Hinckley city-run liquor store has also undergone two additions. In 2009, we also gained a new 27-lot subdivision, resulting in the most new homes being built in 1 year in Hinckley's history. There are also plans for a new commercial development in the area. Grand Casino Hinckley attracts visitors and tourism that are very important to our city. They help other businesses grow, and they are key customers to city services. 9 casino-related properties, including the casino itself, which includes hotels, restaurants, and amphitheater, pay 50% of all our water and sewer utility bills. Another 20% of the bills are paid by commercial customers that are driven by casino-related businesses. These include fast food restaurants and other restaurants and motels. Like all cities, Hinckley invests in maintaining and upgrading its infrastructure. And the city of Hinckley has invested in new wastewater treatment plants, a new well, a lift station, a water tower, new wastewater treatment plant and two water treatment plants. All of these infrastructure improvements serve the entire city and were made possible due to the demand provided by the casino and the related businesses. The total 2010 debt service on these investments is an annual $423,840. We have an additional $1.5 million of debt and other projects that have since been paid down to some extent. To make our debt service payments, we rely on the water and sewer payments we receive from our customers. And as I stated earlier, the Mille Lacs Band, casino-related properties, make half of those rate payments for us. Therefore, Hinckley depends on these properties in order to make our continued water and sewer debt payments. Pine County, our home county, also relies on the Mille Lacs Band properties. The band is the largest taxpayer in Pine County, paying $1,039,881 in property taxes in 2008 alone. The City of Hinckley, Pine County, and Mille Lacs Band Ojibwe work together on a number of projects. Most recently, we've been working on the possibility of a high-speed rail coming through our region. I am very concerned that if the state opens a casino that hurts Grand Casino Hinckley, it would also hurt the City of Hinckley, our businesses, Pine County, and local citizens. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Osmus. President Winfrey from the Prairie Island Indian Community is next on our agenda. And Alan Childs, who's Vice President of Prairie Island Indian Community. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Victoria Winfrey, and I am the president of the Prairie Island Indian Community. Joining me today is Alan Childs II, Tribal Council Vice President. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. The Prairie Island Indian Community is a federally recognized Indian nation located 30 miles southeast of the Twin Cities along the Mississippi River. We own and operate Treasure Island Resort and Casino, which is located just north of Red Wing. We are the largest employer in Goodhue County, employing more than 1,600 tribal and non-tribal team members and generating more than $13 million in annual state and federal taxes. The Prairie Island Indian Community opposes an expansion of gambling in Minnesota for the following reasons. First, expanding gambling off-reservation will not generate additional economic activity or revenues for public investment, but simply shift resources from one economic sector to another. As a result, tribal governments will be less able to provide employment, infrastructure, and other vital programs for their rural communities. My family and I have lived on Prairie Island for generations, and we have witnessed firsthand how gaming has helped improve the quality of life on reservations like ours. In fact, gaming is the only successful economic development tool that has helped to improve life on the reservation. It is important to note that as a government-owned and operated activity, our gaming operation is unlike private, for-profit gaming enterprises. Revenues generated at our tribal government gaming operation provide critical funding for education, health care, and public safety services. And while other governmental units in Minnesota, such as cities and counties, receive funding from the state for basic governmental operations or can turn to taxation to raise operating revenue, Prairie Island's revenue to fund its government is derived solely from gaming activities. The proposals discussed today would reverse the progress tribal government gaming has brought to reservations, dim the future of generations of Native Americans in our state, and very likely increase financial burdens facing Minnesota. Second, gambling expansion will most certainly hurt rural Minnesota. The collective impact of tribal gaming and tribal investment in rural Minnesota is $1.53 billion in economic output, 30,525 jobs, and $882 million in family income. The investment in rural Minnesota and many of those jobs will diminish if gambling is expanded and more focused on the metro area. Lastly, the state of Minnesota will eventually lose because a gambling expansion will never pay off as richly as predicted. States that have relied on gambling to solve their budget woes are learning this hard lesson every day. In state after state, gaming revenues have failed to perform as promised and have lagged behind traditional tax revenue streams, leaving programs underfunded and budgets in further deficit. Mr. Chairman and members, we have provided you with information on the experiences of other states as well as a copy of the 2009 report by the Rockefeller Institute of Government that shows how the nation's economic downturn has significantly affected state-sponsored gambling revenues and further harmed state budgets. In summary, recent history demonstrates that a gambling expansion to fund basic government services is bad public policy. Furthermore, the shift of the gaming economy from rural Minnesota to the metro area will only hurt rural communities and compound the state's budget problems. We encourage lawmakers to consider the hard lessons learned by other states that and not succumb to the false hopes of quick fix proposals that will do more harm than good. Thank you. And then I'd like, Alan has something he would like to add.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. President. Vice President Childs.
Chairman, members, I just have a letter here from the mayor of Red Wing, and also it touches a lot of the same points as the talking points of President Winfrey, so I'll just kind of touch on some highlights from the mayor of Red Wing.
That would be ideal.
John S. Howe. One of his things is, we are the largest employer in Goodhue County, providing more than 1,600 well-paying jobs. In addition, economic impact studies have indicated that more than 200 new businesses have been created in our region to support the operation of the casino. Another major point is, the mayor goes on to say, and not a day goes by where one of our region's youth does not make use of the Prairie Island Ice Arena, which was made possible by a donation from the Prairie Island Indian community in 2000. And in closing, the mayor states, expanding gambling will simply shift economic activity and jobs from our region to another. I encourage lawmakers to keep the needs of rural Minnesota front and center, in particular in these trying economic times. And that, again, is from the mayor of Red Wing. And I have an original signed, if you wish to. I could leave that here, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Childs. I believe everybody's got a copy of that letter as well, and it's now part of the record. Thank you, Mr. Childs. Thank you, President Winfrey.
Thank you.
Finally, we have Mr. McCarthy from the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association. As far as folks that contacted the committee, and then I believe Representative Hackbarth had a handful of people that also contacted him, and we'll try to hear from those folks as well. Mr. McCarthy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John McCarthy. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association. Our association represents federally recognized tribes within the state of Minnesota. These tribes are geographically located in mostly rural communities throughout the state. I'm here today to offer testimony on gambling bills being proposed through the state legislature. The tribal government gaming operations throughout the state have made major contributions to the state economy, the tribal economies, and the local economies of mostly rural areas where they're located. Mr. Chairman, I know you had a long day, so I'll try to keep my testimony brief and as to the point as possible, considering the significant subject matter. What I want to address is jobs, financial projections, public policy, statewide expansion, and the horse and egg industry. In relation to jobs, the gambling proposals being considered reduce or produce zero net gain as far as real jobs creation. It's obviously that slots in the bars and restaurants won't create any new jobs, and in fact will be a major factor in creating serious job losses for working Minnesotans, particularly in rural Minnesota. Slots in bars and restaurants, by its nature, are not labor intensive. Unfortunately, the thousands of workers who will lose their jobs if slots in the bars and restaurants is passed will not be able to go to the bar and restaurant owners and get a job with health benefits. Overall, the economic activity of tribal gaming and tribal gaming directly and indirectly generated 41,700 jobs for hardworking Minnesotans. The majority of these employees, both Indian and non-Indian, live in rural communities where decent paying jobs with benefits that include health care are hard to find. We oppose any activity that would in any way put these jobs in jeopardy, and we believe that what is being proposed does just that. With both the Racino bill and the electronic pull tab, or slots in the bar bill as we see it, proponents tell us that if passed, they will solve all the state's fiscal problems, build a Viking stadium, and many other wonderful things, including creating new jobs. We strongly disagree with this broad-brush public relations approach to promoting the Racino and slots in the bars and restaurants, and believe the real facts should be considered when decisions are being made. We believe that the facts are quite clear, that none of these bills would create any new real jobs, but only shift existing jobs to different locations. If these proposed bills are passed, there will be job losses at Mystic Lake and Treasure Island due to reduced revenue shifting to the Canterbury Racino. The jobs lost at these two operations will simply shift to the new Racino, providing no net gain in jobs. Running ACES Racino will cause revenue loss estimated as high as 40% for both the Mille Lacs and Fond du Lac bands. This will result in job losses for both of these operations. The jobs gained at running ACES will be at the expense of the rural jobs lost further north. The rural jobs that are most likely lost will not be brought back, as there is no industry in these rural areas to pick up the losses. The scenario again produces no net gain. We have projected the following impacts on revenue and jobs. Two racetracks get 3,000 machines each, and 4,438 bars each get 10 VLTs. Tribal gaming revenues fall by hundreds of millions of dollars. Direct employment impacts. The 14,500 direct casino jobs are cut to 6,750 jobs. Tribal governments, 6,000 jobs are cut by 2,400 jobs. Combined tribal casino and government job cuts total 9,150 jobs. Indirect and induced employment, when you add those in, it's 21,200 jobs. And this includes tribal vendors, capital spending, plus respending. Total jobs lost would be in the neighborhood of 19,000 jobs. Financial projections. On February 18th, your own house research put out a document that I believe starts to bring things into a much more realistic picture. Many of the outrageous projections reported by many of the proponents of the various gambling proposals have been challenged. While this document is not a fiscal note, it is a well-written document that makes reasonable assumptions as to gambling potential in Minnesota. As you can see from the reading, this paper, some of the past projections offered by the proponents of gambling expansion are really over the top. I'd like to offer you a very simple outline of what we believe might be a reasonable scenario with racinos and slots in the bars. Assumptions. Minnesota gaming market is estimated at about $1.5 billion per year. We see slow or no growth in the near term, next 2 to 4 years. Canterbury and Running Aces each operate 3,000 slot machines on behalf of the state lottery. Machines win average $160 per day to $350 million per year. Racinos operate with a 40% net income margin, which is standard in the industry. State lottery leases the VLTs and the slots for 7% of the daily machine revenue and incurs about 4% for operating advertising. The revenue split. The state of Minnesota receives 35% in lieu of taxes, which equals to about $120 to $122 million per year. Racino location contract, or the Racinos, They share 55%, or $175 million per year, after paying 1% to the city and 1% to the county, 7.25% for horses. Racino's net is approximately $70 million per year, or $35 million each. The lottery is 10% equals $35 million, less expenses of about $24.5 million for the leases and $14 million for expenses, putting them possibly in the hole by $3.5 million. Under this scenario, the lottery barely breaks even. The state gets approximately $120 million, and the Racino owners, one a company owned by a Minnesota family and the other owned by a hedge fund out of Connecticut, get approximately $170 million between them. As we have been told, the state share of the $120 million, some people could be applied to various budget deficits, jobs, health care, and maybe a Viking stadium. The Racino owners, of course, will have to pay for expenses to operate the Racinos and some funds to the various purses. Remember, the Racino cost does not include the cost of equipment like machines, surveillance cameras, or online accounting devices. These costs are borne by the state lottery, and they are cutting it pretty close if they stay within their usual 10% overhead range, although under some of the scenarios they wouldn't be obligated to do such. While this could work, unfortunately, there's some added twists. There is the question of the payment to the Environmental Fund required by the Minnesota state law. The fact that Minnesota has a well-established tribal gaming industry that will certainly ramp up a huge marketing effort to maintain their share of the revenue. This costs many millions of dollars to all involved and throw a lot of projections off by a significant amount. Representative Hackbirth mentioned earlier about the state of Maine and the wonderful thing that happened up there with $50 million going to the state. They have no tribal casinos. We have 18. So there's a little apples and oranges there. We have to be careful of that. At the House Research Department, document suggests there is a high likelihood that one or more of the parties would file a lawsuit. If this were to occur, it would put things up in the air, could delay any revenue flow for some time. The proponents claim that they need the revenue now to offset these deficits. Electronic pull tabs, well, it's our contention that basically these machines are one chip away from a slot machine. We would take an assumption of $70 per day net revenue, which would yield $245.3 million. That's at the low end. $90 per day net revenue yields $446.8 million, the high end. Again, these estimates are quite different from the $1.1 billion the proponents were projecting some time back. This also assumes that there would be criteria set for the amount per day that each bar or restaurant would have to guarantee before they get machines. I think that a lot of the bars and restaurants that the authors of this legislation intend to help would be sadly out of luck, as they probably won't qualify. Another assumption is that the lion's share of these bars and restaurants are in rural Minnesota. This looks like it come down to another case of rural versus urban when it comes to who gets the help. Assuming 30% at the low end of the range, slots and bars could generate state taxes of about $82 million and at the upper end, $135 million. That would be generated before applying any offsets for reductions in other gambling revenues. Again, we have to add the marketing factor into this equation to the existing gaming venues. Lottery, charitable, and tribal casinos are not going to roll over and do nothing. This could also develop into a fierce marketing war for gambling dollars. I believe that question might be to the benefit, that question might be benefits far outweigh the costs. Representative Hackbarth also mentioned bonding as a way for the Minnesota Vikings, using gambling revenue to offset the payment of the bonds. And our experience, and we have documentation that indicates that's a very unlikely scenario. Bonding companies are very shy right now of using gambling money to retire debt on bonds. With the exception of parimutuel wagering, that's authorized by a constitutional amendment approved by the voters, all gambling in Minnesota is currently run by government or charitable purposes. Tribal gaming, the Minnesota State Lottery, and charitable operations have been the rule to this point. What we now see is a lowering of the bar in a direction that is at best a slippery slope. If you were to believe the proponents of these proposals, gambling will cure all of Minnesota's budget problems. The magic bullet that everyone has agreed was not out there. It now has appeared. I think the legislature only has to look to several states that have recently embraced that philosophy to see its folly. Pennsylvania, Delaware, Indiana, and New York have all authorized expansion of gambling in recent years. None of these states have come close to meeting their projected goal from gambling revenues. Pennsylvania was just forced to pass more gambling legislation allowing table games at their casinos because they're not getting enough from the slots they had already approved. One can only wonder how many additional casinos or slots in the bars will be needed to solve next year's budget crisis. Along that same line, there's an interesting factor. There is no prohibition in any of these bills or in state law that would stop more casinos from popping up all over the state of Minnesota. And by the way, the legislature does not have a say in that. That would be decided by the Racing Commission. There could be in St. Cloud, Mankato, Austin, Rochester, Grand Rapids. One can only wonder, now we take a look at Las Vegas, Nevada, a city that derives almost all of its operating revenue from gambling. They have serious budget issues. Their foreclosure rates are the highest in the country. Their unemployment rates are out of control, and hundreds of millions of dollars in construction projects are either canceled or on hold because they don't have the capital to move them forward. The panacea that some believe gambling brings is not all it's cracked up to be. Gambling is not recession-proof, as some states have found the hard way. Lastly, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to touch on an issue with the horse and ag industry. There's been a lot of misinformation passed around about the economic benefits of Racino to the ag and horse industry in Minnesota. The proponents have been putting out a lot of facts and figures. They're just plain wrong. Here's a quick check of some of the information that needs clarification. They're saying hundreds of thousands of horses dot Minnesota landscapes. In fact, Minnesota has a lot fewer horses, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The Minnesota horse population in 2007 was comprised of 90,140 horses and ponies. These animals were kept on 13,048 farms statewide, including more than 12,000 farms in the 7-county metro area. Overall, Minnesota has 80,992 farms statewide in 2007, generating $13.2 billion in agriculture products. All of these horses, the Racing Commission reports, only about 2% ever had their hoofs touched down at a racetrack. Racino enthusiasts, with their desire for slot machines, have led them to commandeer a genuine public desire to preserve the state's horse industry and to embellish the financial impact racinos might have on the Minnesota farm economy. Policymakers should expect a more rigorous analysis than back-of-the-envelope app calculations before accepting the back-of-the-envelope presentations. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, I believe that these proposals set the state of Minnesota on the slippery slope toward turning Minnesota into Las Vegas. Tribal government has done a great job for Minnesota and has more than helped the tribal economies and the non-tribal economies in the areas where they're located. Indian people and non-Indian people alike have good-paying jobs with health care. Revenue generated from these gaming operations have been used to provide housing, education, health care, social services, and public safety to reservation areas that have been in dire need. Some tribes who now have the financial stability have quietly been helping other tribes with grants and low-interest loans to supplement their overwhelming needs. To date, the amount involved in these are in excess of $400 million. This is all very positive. It provides hope and opportunity for thousands of people. If these governments are forced to spend huge sums in marketing wars, this philanthropy will cease. Every dollar a tribe has to spend in that way takes that dollar away from a Head Start program, a health care clinic that provides much-needed services for the people who live there. For these reasons, I implore you to vote against any proposal to expand gambling in any form here in Minnesota. Thank you for your time and attention. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. At this point, we actually have exhausted our committee's allotted time. We did have four people. They didn't contact the committee. They contacted Representative Hackbarth. As I have the time in mind, there was about 60 minutes of testimony in favor of the bills. There's been about 36 minutes now in opposition. And out of fairness, if any of the four people, Mr. Schreiner, Ms. Ramalingam, Mr. Giefer, or Mr. Cook, are here to testify in opposition to the bills, I guess I'd give them an opportunity to do that because we tried to have some balance between the proponents. If any of those four are here and would like to testify in opposition to the bills, they're welcome to do that. Otherwise, what I would suggest that we do, and I don't see any of them running down, I'm assuming that they were here to testify in favor, and I appreciate that. But I'd, in light of members' time, I thought we'd give members a few minutes to ask questions of anybody that is still here, if members do have questions. Otherwise, for the sake of the four individuals that contacted Representative Hackbarth, I certainly intend to stick around for a little while afterwards if they'd like to visit with me, and usually members are kind of around the table here and there as well. So with that, are there specific questions or concerns that members care to raise? Otherwise, I do believe we got a very good flavor for all of the bills, and I appreciate the testimony that's been presented on both sides of the issue. For anybody that's still here, I would also suggest if you haven't already provided your testimony to us or a summary of your testimony, that that would be helpful as well. As these issues, if they continue to move further along, it would be nice to have that to rely upon. The one thing I would like to do is, Representative Brown, when she initially came up, she noted that she had some closing comments, and I want to make certain that we give her an opportunity to share those. Representative Kahn is still here. I know that, or I believe that Representative Hackbarth was kind of monitoring the testimony as well. But Representative Brown, any final closing remarks?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you so much. Thank you for holding the hearing today. And I just want to say that I would really like to make sure that the committee and the attendance of this meeting right now do not confuse House File 2034 with any of the other bills that you heard today. This was truly a bill that was brought forward by local folks in Albert Lea as a way to increase revenue to their charitable gaming, to their mom-and-pop bars, and it's kind of nice that it would bring in some extra money to the state as well. And I just wanted, and I am so sorry, Mr. McCormick, but I just need to point out once again that we, he and I have had conversations over the past year to truly create a bill that is pull tabs only electronic. And I wonder if, and then I'll just say a couple words afterwards, could you just take a minute or two and just confirm that and maybe explain why this really is electronic version of the game pull tabs that is currently legal?
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair, members, the draft of 2034 ties the play of games specifically to the existing rules for the play of paper pull tabs. And that in turn includes the play of a discrete deal of pull tabs, the nature of play, and all the existing both laws and rules. And that was something that Representative Brown asked us to do specifically so that it would be narrowly tailored.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Representative Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, House File 2034 really allows charitable gambling revenue to increase through efficiencies. The note that you have in front of you says it could be $650 million to go to our charitable entities. It also allows the gambling board to monitor those games from a remote site, and it's projected to increase state revenue voluntarily by $17.7 million per year. When we put this bill together, I had very much respect for the tribes and the commitments that we've made to them about gambling. And I still do. I never intended to bring forward a bill that might increase issues that people have with gambling. I respect that as well. And that's why I put together a bill that was pull tabs only electronic, a form of gambling that is least likely to play into those addictions that we are so afraid of. In time, when both the charitable organizations and the state of Minnesota, and this is the time to do this, in a time when both charitable organizations are mom-and-pop shops and Minnesota is seeking revenue, this is a time to actually not only have an informational hearing, but have a hearing where this can be voted up or down. House File 2034 is the only bill presented today that solves that problem that the mom-and-pop bars need to have solved in terms of keeping people around just to do the things that they do at a bar. Also, I want to say one more thing, and coming from Albert Lea, I'm right on the border of the state, and we don't have big casinos in our area, except for just about 15 minutes south in Iowa. So You know, that's keeping, in this case, that would be keeping our home folks home, spending their money in the community, and that's what we need in rural Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Brown. And Representative Kahn, final remarks?
Mr. Chairman, I literally just have one sentence, maybe two sentences to say. I hope that you listen very carefully to all of the opponents. None of them were relevant to either of the two bills that I am proposing. One of them legalizes and taxes an activity that we all know what is going on illegally in the state. It broadens the field for all participants, the mom and every place the lottery tickets are sold, mom and pop bars. It would also be allowed, certainly would be allowed through the compacts at all of the casinos. So it's the one thing that broadens the scope, does not just use traditional gambling. And then the next thing is, again, nothing that was said could have been said in opposition to the casino at the airport. It's not in competition with anything. It doesn't provoke any great addiction to gambling, unless you want to gonna miss your plane. And so I just want to point out that I did not hear one word of the testimony against it, which applied to either of those bills. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Clearly, your sentences have a lot of semicolons. thank you to everyone that came here today, and particularly thank you to members for your patience. So we usually don't go over in this committee, but I think it was an important topic to give some good discussion to. Thank you all very much. With that, we stand adjourned.